Pullman National Monument in Chicago, Illinois, with your host, Dr. Lynn Hughes.
We welcome you to Live from the Pullman National Monument, our global cast magazine format talk radio show, where we discuss all things culturally economic development, i.e. tourism, and we hold informative conversations on the arts, music, business, and people. I'm your host, Dr. Lynn Hughes, founder of the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum, a National Park Service site in Chicago, Illinois. Good day to you, my listening audience, and we thank you for joining us. Stay with us.
Support Hughes Peterson Publishing by visiting thepullmanmessenger.com and purchase an annual subscription. It's just $12 a year. Or purchase an Anthology of Respect by Dr. Lynn Hughes, available on Amazon.com.
In the tradition that we are establishing, let's talk about the Pullman National Monument. We have established this component of the show because the Pullman National Monument is still very new, and we are still in the process of branding and identifying ourselves. For us, that's very important because if we don't brand and identify ourselves, others will do so, and that's always a problem. Case in point, people in general and certain media outlets included still write about and refer to the Pullman National Monument as one building in Pullman, and that is the clock tower, as the Pullman National Monument. And that is inaccurate. Unintentionally or not, doing so is divisive. According to the United States Department of Interior, and according to the proclamation established by President Barack Obama, on February the 19th, 2015, the historic Pullman District in Chicago, Illinois, is the Pullman National Monument. Unlike other national monuments, the Pullman National Monument is not just one building. It is a thematic district. Within that district, there are several tourist sites, lots of great things to see. And so that is important for people to understand that. As a matter of fact, people in the area still, because of what they read, don't understand that the Pullman National Monument is a thematic district and not just one building. We have in the Pullman Messenger a map that would be great for people to get and see for yourselves. It identifies, I think there are 7 sites within the monument that will better help you understand and interpret the Pullman National Monument. So a little commercial, go to pullmanmessenger.com and you can purchase an annual subscription for $12. Included in that magazine is a map of the Pullman National Monument. And there you will see all of the wonderful sites that are there for people to visit when they come. And we are the Pullman National Monument, a part of the National Park District's site. We are what is known as a partner site. The National Park Service owns a building in the park, in the Pullman National Monument. They are perceived as the authority in the Pullman National Monument under the National Park Service. But there are partner sites in the National Monument. There, of course, is the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum. There is the Hotel Florence. there is the Pullman Clock Tower building. They're still vacillating on what that's going to be called. Some people refer to it as a museum, but it is not. It is more, I think, ultimately, it will be more of an archive, a repository for different things, but it is not a museum. Then there's the Greenstone Church. There are other places. There is the Pullman Visitor Center. That's the gist of the sites where people can go. But of course, the entire district is the housing stock of the original town of Pullman. And we have wonderful house tours that we offer, walking house tours that exist in the Pullman National Monument. So I hope that that helps to define, if you will, the Pullman National Monument in a way that will be helpful to people who come from all over the world to visit the Pullman National Monument. And they mistakenly, because they have had inaccurate information given to them, think that the Pullman National Monument is one building, and that is the clock tower, and that is inaccurate. So, without further ado, we will take a quick break and come back with our first guest.
Visit the PullmanBordermuseum.com, where you can purchase an annual membership at the level of your choice. And, of course, visit our website here to find out more about the show live from the Pullman National Monument at bbsradio.com/live from PNM to contact us.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Live from the Pullman National Monument. We have a great show for you today. We have a very interesting guest. Our guest today is Kathy Hambrick. She is the founder and executive director of the River Road African American Museum in Louisiana. Ms. Hambrick is a public historian, a curator and cultural activist, and a preservationist. She established the River Road African American Museum in Donaldsonville, Louisiana, one of the South's first museums dedicated to interpreting slavery and the achievements of African Americans in the rural communities along the Mississippi River. Ms. Hambrick, welcome to today's show.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. Well, I have been anticipating your coming on because I've heard so much about you and the museum, and I thought that you would be a very interesting guest for our listening audience to become acquainted with and know more about who you are and what you do. So we're honored to have this opportunity for you to join us today. So let's begin with your telling our listening audience where the River Road African American Museum is located.
The River Road African American Museum is located almost centrally between Baton Rouge and New Orleans here in South Louisiana. We're on the west bank of the Mississippi River, only about 15 minutes from I-10. So we're 30 minutes south of Baton Rouge and about an hour north from New Orleans. So we're very easy for visitors to get to right off of I-10.
Well, that's good to know. I always like to make sure that our guests give very specific information because this is not just a local show. We are a national and international show, and in our business, when I say our, I'm part of your we, like to have the listening audience be as informed as possible about the tourism site locations, because that, after all, that's what this show is about. Fundamental base of this show is about tourism and about the contributions of African-American tourist sites within the broader tourism arena. And so we the purpose of this show is to have a vehicle or platform for institutions like yours and mine to let the general audience, the traveling audience, know who you are and what you do and what you have to offer, so that when they're in your area, they can visit you. So
thank you so much for the service that you do through this show.
Well, you are very welcome. You are very welcome. Tell us when the museum opened.
We opened the museum on March 12, 1994. So next year, 2017, will actually be our 23rd year anniversary.
So are you the founder?
I am the founder and presently the executive director of the museum. And I do have two co-founders that I always like to acknowledge, because they are my two brothers who basically helped to support me with the idea of starting the museum. We started this museum without any public funding. And basically, we've been able to sustain ourselves now for 23 years. But I'll tell you, in the land of Queen Sugar, that has not been an easy endeavor.
I know a little bit about that. I know a little bit about that. People oftentimes, outside looking in, when people see museums, they have this notion of the grass is always greener kind of thing, because they just assume that museums, and they put us all in the same group, and we're not, that museums have this automatic pot of money that they can tap into and everything is easy. And I know from firsthand experience, as the founder of the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum, without public money, that it is not an easy job. And point of fact, it is a very difficult job. So my hat is off to you from a personal perspective and from a professional perspective. I know that it's a very difficult job, but these kinds of jobs are more often than not a labor of love, and you have to be committed and willing to make the sacrifices for whatever the motivation is to do this. And it is a very difficult job. I know that. And so I kind of want to make sure that the listening audience knows that it is not easy, and you need all the help that you can get in doing that. And it doesn't always come at all.
Well, you know, for your listening audience, you know, what the difficulty is for any of us who are trying to build an institution. And I don't think in the African-American community that we have been in the institution building business very much anymore. When you think about in the 20th century, how many HBCUs, other museums such as the DuSable and some of those first African-American museums who are now approaching their 40th and 50th year anniversaries, Detroit, Chicago, places like that. What institutions are we building is the question I oftentimes ask myself. And that's one of the reasons why I just have not given up yet on building this institution for preservation of our history here in South Louisiana, why I feel it's so important that we continue to keep our doors open.
Well, hang on. Just keep doing what you do, and I know that it's hard, but that you will continue to thrive. I know you will. I know that one of the things that I would like to know is for you to tell us, what would you say is different and or unique about the River Road Museum?
Well, I would say the thing that's different and unique about our museum is that we're in a rural community. The majority of the African American museums are located in the southeast region of the country. Of course, the ones that are most well known are the ones in Memphis and Birmingham, Chicago, and the big cities. But what makes us unique is that we're in a very rural town. We're in a town that is 75% African American. We are in the town where America's first black mayor was elected to office in 1868. We're in a town that has a connection to Chicago in that Ulysses Grant Daly, who was one of the founders of Providence Hospital there in Chicago, worked alongside Dr. Daniel Hale Williams. He was born in Donisonville, Ulysses Grant Daly, who's associated with that hospital in Chicago. Dr. Margaret Burroughs, who is the founder of the DuSable African American Museum, is from a little town called St. Rose, Louisiana, not too very far from Donisonville, where my museum is located. So we're very, very unique that we're a small town, but we have many connections to other places on this Mississippi River.
Well, you just shared with us some very interesting information. I know Dr. Burroughs very well. When I made the decision to found the A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum, she was very encouraging and encouraged me, sometimes very sternly.
Yeah.
She
Yes. She was quite a woman, and also mentored me when I first became a member of the National Organization, the Association of African American Museums, of which she was one of the founders. And I can remember her so clearly saying to me after year five that it would get easier at year 10. And then I remember being on the bus with her at a conference in Birmingham at year 10, and she said it'll get easier at year 20. So she had her way of encouraging all of us in the museum business to keep our heads up and to trudge on, you know. And so it was an honor and a pleasure to get to know her.
And we needed her. We needed her because I think without people like her, you and I would not even be having this conversation.
Absolutely.
I wanted to also, I know that in your location, the location itself has had some experiences with some major challenges. You had Hurricane Katrina, and then you just recently had another catastrophe. Why don't you tell the listening audience how those two events have impacted the museum in general, and perhaps some specifics that you could be still dealing with the aftermath of the two?
Well, you know, Hurricane Katrina, both Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Rita, Hurricane Ike, we almost lose track here in Louisiana. Ike, Rita, Katrina, and then the recent summer flood, fortunately did not have a physical impact on the River Road African American Museum. However, with Hurricane Katrina and New Orleans only being an hour away and so many people evacuating north across Lake Pontchartrain into Ascension Parish and the greater Baton Rouge area where I live, I can tell you that I had 19 households of family who were affected by Hurricane Katrina. Sometimes now, after a lifetime of visiting New Orleans, seven generations back, now when I go to New Orleans, sometimes I feel as a tourist myself, because the places where my aunts and uncles lived, my great aunts and uncles lived, the places and businesses that I frequented all of my life and all of my parents' life are no longer a part of our community. My largest membership base was and visitation base was from New Orleans before Hurricane Katrina. We still have not recovered from that because the population of African Americans in regards to public schools, just communities, are not the same.
So I'm sure that impacted your bottom line, because it is, you know, you're a cultural institution, but it is a business.
It is a business. Museums are businesses, and it's with the recent flood. I'll just go on to just say something briefly about that. The flood was in Baton Rouge, just 30 miles away. My church in the North Baton Rouge community was completely destroyed. 3,000 plus members, households, as many as 150 households just within my church have been completely destroyed. Two of my board members had severe flooding, one at a business, and another who is now faced with living in a trailer. She is a pediatrician whose grandfather was one of the first Black doctors featured in an exhibit in our museum called Rural Black Doctors. He received his medical degree in the early 1900s and practiced medicine. His first office was in Donisonville. So the challenges, the physical challenges of living in South Louisiana, the climate makes it that much more difficult for us, especially being in the building preservation business. We own five buildings as a part of our collection, and we interpret these buildings as a part of the advancement and contributions, telling the story of the advancements and contributions of African Americans who live in this area that is most well known in the tourism business as sugarcane plantation country.
So I was going to ask you to tell us something about your exhibits, but I think you just opened that door for me when you said you had five buildings. So the five buildings that you have, essentially, they're part of your exhibit collection.
Yes. One of the buildings was built in 1886. Property first acquired in 1883, and it was known as the True Friends Benevolent Association Building. And it was benevolent societies were formed to provide insurance for African Americans after the Civil War. White insurance companies would not insure Blacks, so many of our grandparents and foreparents created these organizations where you'd pay a quarter a month to the society, 50 cents, a dollar a month to the society. They kept very, very good financial records, and they would provide burial insurance, health insurance. They provided scholarships for students, some of the first students to attend the Xavier University, Dillard University, which was before known as New Orleans University, that actually had a Black medical school, the equivalent of Fisk University's medical school. So these benevolent societies, there were hundreds of them throughout Louisiana and throughout the South, some of them having names the General Grand Independent Order of Brothers and Sisters of Love and Charity, North America, South America, Liberia, and adjacent islands. Now, that's an acronym that that is also very long, but that organization met at the True Friends Hall. We own that building, and I would say in many ways it might be considered what the House of Blues is trying to recreate, because many of the jazz and blues musicians who went on to New Orleans to become famous played at the True Friends Hall. Many political rallies were held at the True Friends Hall, and it was a part of the social mecca of the River Road communities where people worked on sugarcane farms and worked on the river, you know, dating back to as early as when the first enslaved people were brought to Louisiana, 1708. So this is the geography and the landscape of the area where our buildings are. The next building is the Central Agricultural School, which was a Rosenwald-type building. For your audience who may not, well, you know, you all know Julius Rosenwald.
yes, we have a Julius Rosenwald building that's under restoration here in Chicago now.
Yes, and Rosenwald was the president of Sears Roebuck, a Jewish philanthropist who was approached by Booker T. Washington in 1912 for assistance with building schools in the rural South for Black children. Together, Julius Rosenwald and Booker T. Washington, with the help of Tuskegee architectural students, they built 5,300 schools throughout the South. We own one of those buildings, which I had moved. I moved, or not literally moved, but my organization, the River Road African American Museum, moved across the Mississippi River to save. So when you come to Donisonville, you can actually walk through this wooden, four-room wooden schoolhouse that has been reassembled in Donisonville and hear more about that relationship between Rosenwald and Booker T. The next building that we own is a little shotgun medical office of a doctor named Dr. John H. Laurie, who is a prominent rice farmer. He owned a plantation called the Africa Plantation in the 1930s up until the 1970s. So the building where we are currently located is the home of a retired teacher who taught at a Rosenwald school, but who was also a student at Wiley College, which is where the great debate took place for your listening audience who have seen the movie The Great Debaters.
Yes.
That university, yeah, that school was in Texas. So Miss Sylvia, whose house we're located in right now, was a student at Wiley College. So, yes, somehow I ended up being in the business of collecting buildings. And, you know, as if it wasn't enough just to have a collection of artifacts, photographs, and documents.
I was going to ask the question, in each building then has its own separate set of artifacts and are part of the exhibit for each individual building?
Well, the artifacts associated with each building are in our current museum building that you will see, you know, on our website, or if you go to our Facebook page. It's a Creole cottage style house museum. We do walking tours in Donisonville where we will walk you will walk with us around the corner where you will see the True Friends Benevolent Society Hall, of which now has a new roof. And we hope to eventually get the funding to restore the True Friends Hall. That, it seems, after all of these hurricanes, and each time we make a little bit of progress, there's a storm that comes and damages the building, may cost as much as $1 million. The Rosenwald School is across the street from the True Friends Hall, so you will be able to walk through that building. We do have a few artifacts in the building, old desks, children's toys, and a small exhibit in the building. But we are raising $200,000 to complete the interior of that building because we had to stabilize it, meeting the new hurricane codes after Hurricane Katrina. So you will see these buildings. You can enter a few of the buildings, but Donisonville itself is like walking through a museum or driving through a museum. The town was established in 1806. 200-year-old oak trees, a community where you see African-Americans taking care of their daily lives and moving through the town on bicycles and driving cars and just walking to the store. It's quite an interesting place with a long and exciting history of advancement in regards to African-Americans in sugarcane country.
One of the things I wanted just quickly insert here, because people are listening and we've never done this before, so today is a first. For those people who are listening, who may be very interested in hearing about your plight, if you will, if they're interested in maybe consider donating to you or have questions, and they can call in. They can call in our toll-free number, 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. I just wanted to insert that because I think it would be nice if we're able to help in some way with what you're doing. This is an absolute amazing conversation. And let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. Today's show is partially underwritten by United Auto Workers, Local 551, and Hughes Peterson Publishing, Chicago, Illinois. And we're back with our guest, Kathy Hembrick, who is a founder and executive director of River Roads African American Museum in Donaldsonville, Louisiana. Very interesting conversation that we're having about the River Road African American Museum. One of the things that I wanted to know was that you represent a very rare guest type. Because not only do you fit the mode of being a guest on our segment around the museum table, you also have knowledge because of your prior position as president of the Association of African American Museums. That gives you a very unique perspective in that you have a broader sense of what museums mean to the tourism industry, and so I would like to have you have some input there, but before we go, I just wanted to say ask the question how we can help. And so I think the best way that we can help from this chair is to let people know that they can call in to 888-429-5471 and ask questions, leave a message for you, or visit our website at bbsradio.com live from PNM and perhaps send an email or message to you that we will certainly make sure that you get, because it is commendable what you have done and experienced and continue to do in spite of those inconveniences, shall we say. And I know all too well firsthand what it means to be the founder of a cultural institution, particularly if it is done without public funding. And it's not an easy job. And so I want to just offer this platform to say that whatever we can do to help from this microphone, we are willing, interested and willing to do that, and hope that your being a guest on this show today will help facilitate that happening. And so is there something that you have before we go, before I ask you to put your tourism hat on, you didn't see that coming. I want to know, is there something that you have coming up that you would like to tell the listening audience about?
It's not very often that we get an opportunity to have another museum offer to give us a platform to raise money, or to help us keep our doors open. But I think that we have a shared interest and concern about the way history will be written about us in the future, if you just think about that. And that's why African American museums exist. I mean, we are the custodians or the caretakers of our history and the legacy of our parents and our grandparents. For anybody who would like to help us here in Louisiana, you can go to our website. It's www.AfricanAmericanMuseum.org. We're in the process of launching a very new website at an event that will be held on November the 19th, just in a couple of weeks, and it's called Gospel and Gumbo. So for anyone who is interested in coming to Louisiana for this event, you'll have an opportunity to sample or taste three different types of gumbo. Many of you may not know, but the word gumbo is an African word, Kian gumbo, from West Africa, the Akan people, and it actually means okra. So if you say okra gumbo, you're actually meaning okra or gumbo. So you will have a chance to taste filet gumbo, learn the difference between filet gumbo and okra gumbo, and we will also have a vegan gumbo. So Donna Seville will light up the city for the holidays on that evening. The museum will open at 10. We'll start setting up for the gospel music at 4, and we will serve gumbo through the evening on the streets around the museum until 8 o'clock p.m. So you can go to the website, or you can contact me, Kathy Hambrick, at kathe@aamuseum.org, and we'll send you the flyer and more information about accommodations at the bed and breakfasts or accommodations in New Orleans or Baton Rouge for anyone who would like to join us on that evening. We have a giving campaign that will be on the new website, so just stay in tune and stay in touch with us, and thank you again for having us on. And most museums, we need your support, just as the HBCUs around the country need support. If you think about it, there's talk going around that in 25 to 35 years, there may be no more HBCUs. HBCUs meaning historically black colleges and universities. If we are not careful, there will also not be very many African-American museums around. There are about 125 of us now around the country in rural and urban communities. But if we don't support our own, then we will not and should not complain if we don't get support from other segments of the community. Black people have to step up. We absolutely must support these institutions, these very, very important institutions that people like Mary McLeod Bethune, Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, all of our forefathers whose stories are in these museums. We have to protect their legacy and train the next generation of curators, preservationists, and museum professionals to care for these very valuable collections that are still left in rural communities and cities all throughout the country.
That then leads me right into the question that I wanted to, or the discussion that I wanted to have in this last segment of the show, and that is the support that you are suggesting must come from probably, I consider, unconventional sources, which is how we have survived for 21 years, the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum. We have to lean more into the vehicles that are available to us. And the natural vehicle that is available to us is the tourism arena. I think that we in general don't realize the benefits and the dollars, frankly, that are in the tourism arena. I just think that we have not perfected how to tap into that, which is what this whole show is about. It's about tourism. And so I think that maybe there ought to be some reevaluation of how you market yourselves to the broader tourist industry, so that when people come from around the country and around the world to America and to the various cities, states and cities within, that they know what's there and what's available. I'm not sure in your tenure at the Association of African American Museums whether that was a topic of conversation or not. I was going to ask you if you knew how many African American museums that there are, but you answered that question. But the broader question is, in your tenure, in your space where you were president of the Association of African American Museums, was that ever a targeted conversation?
Well, yes, it was. And, you know, as the association members supported the development of the recently opened museum in D.C., the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture, it was a big part of our discussion. Part of the discussion was, how much would the National Museum's opening there in D.C. on the Mall impact the museums in the other communities around the country? I say that there is room for all of us. We are traveling at phenomenal rates. We spend more money than most people when we travel and stay. We want to stay in nice hotels. We stay, have a tendency to stay longer. There has been quite a bit of research done in the past 25 years about how and where African Americans spend their dollars when they travel. And I think that as an association and as a colleague, you being a colleague of mine, we need to look more closely at where are we staying, what hotels are we staying, what restaurant venues are we staying, how do we spend our dollars when we go to these professional football games, when we go to the various college towns and cities where our children are going to school or grandchildren are going to college. When we choose to go to Disney, whether it's Disney or the Smithsonian in D.C., what are those hotels? Where are we buying gas? Where are we shopping? We need to be more aware of the economic impact that African Americans have when we spend our money as tourists. And I don't think that we capitalize enough as nonprofit institutions on getting support from some of these places and corporations where we spend our money. I can tell you, I have seen studies before here in Louisiana where somebody knows what type of potato chip we buy and how many potato chips we eat out of that bag. It's calculated down to probably dollars and cents. So how do we, as contributors to heritage tourism, to the economic development of our states, counties, parishes, and cities, how do we better capture or get some of those dollars returned back to our institutions who preserve the history of these towns, cities, and states, and on the larger level, America?
I think that we've just hit on something. Because again, this show is about tourism. That's the broader umbrella. But underneath that broader umbrella is what we call cultural economic development. And so all of those things that are fit under that label of cultural economic development warrant further investigation and beyond conversation, action to do just what you are suggesting, because it's culture sells. Tourism is a billion-dollar industry, and people just don't. I think the average person really doesn't get when they say tourism. I think the first thing they think of is like a Disney World or, you know, that kind of thing. In Chicago, we have a Navy Pier and the Bean. But there are smaller entities and businesses existing.
And events. Events also. I mean, right here in New Orleans, we have the world's largest Black music festival, Essence Festival. And, I mean, that is a tourism event. And how many of the Black businesses in New Orleans over the years, or the numbers of Black businesses that have literally had to close their doors over the years because they are not getting a large enough segment of the dollars that are coming into the city of New Orleans. I mean, all of these things need to be looked at when you're trying to, if the Deltas or the any one of the fraternities or sororities, when you're deciding to book your convention and your conference at a city, you need to think about, first of all, visiting an African-American museum, taking your dollars to those African-American museums. And you also need to think about where are you spending your dollars when you choose your hotel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This has been a fascinating conversation. And we beyond the time that we have, I would like to invite you back again so that we can continue this conversation, and producers will be in touch so that we can, in fact, do that very soon. I want to thank you so very much for coming on today. Kathy Hemgard, everybody, who founder and the executive director of the River Road African American Museum. We're going to take a quick break and come right back and wrap up today's show. Today's show is brought to you by the Pullman Messenger Magazine and Hughes Peterson Publishing. Partially underwritten by United Auto Workers, Local 551, and the Chicago Neighborhood Initiative. So we're out of time. I want to thank once again our fabulous engineer, Mr. Don Newsom, our technical advisor, Antoinette Wright, Keisha Shavers, our producer, Dr. McIntyre Evans, and David Peterson, and want to once again thank our guests today, Kathy Hambrick from the River Road African American Museum. And don't forget to visit our website, BBS Radio Live from the Pullman National Monument, and visit the National A. Philip Randolph Pullman Porter Museum's website. We have lots of good things going on, exciting things. Holiday seasons are coming up, and we always need money, so come join with a membership and visit the Pullman Messenger. Get your annual subscription. We thank you so much for joining us today for another edition of Live from the Pullman National Monument. See you next time.
Live from Pullman National Monument was brought to you by Hughes Peterson Publishing in Chicago, Illinois, and My Rhythm Mind Spa in Homewood, Illinois. Hosted by Dr. Lynn Hughes and produced by Dr. McIntyre Evans.